Hello, I'm Andrew Cord, and this is our study series through Fact or Fiction. We now enter into Section 2, God Exists, Fact or Fiction. This is Topic 2.1, God's Existence Can Be Proven, Fact or Fiction. And as we've done with the other topical study discussions, we start with conversation points. And I've mentioned that the conversation points are simply meant to invite people who perhaps don't come from a religious or even a Christian background to feel free to be able to share their point of view, to be able to share what they honestly believe, honestly think, and to be able to do so in what we might, well, I trust, is a warm, congenial, open and friendly environment. So here's our conversation points. Someone's religious beliefs should be a private matter. Agree or disagree? In other words, if you've got a religious view, keep it to yourself. Don't share it. Do you agree with that or disagree with that? Because we hear this all the time. All right. Second conversation point. Governments should not legislate morality. Agree or disagree? Now, hopefully, you as group leader are going to ask those who agree to firstly define, what do you mean by morality? And therefore, what are you actually agreeing with or disagreeing with? And secondly, for those who say, well, I actually disagree with that, I think governments can only legislate morality. Well, why do you think that? And have them explain their point of view. And by the way, morality means right or wrong. And if you think about it, every law is a statement of right or wrong. So this is not, it shouldn't be controversial that governments are actually charged to legislate for morality. All right, third discussion point. No one knows what happens to any person after they die. Agree or disagree? You hear this often too. People say this. Hopefully someone's going to say, actually, I have good reason for not agreeing with this. And you as group leader should go, oh, why is that? And I'll say, well, because I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian and I know someone who died and came back to tell us about it. And that's Jesus, of course. And Jesus also told some parables about dying and what happens after death as well. So he clearly knew what happens to a person after death. And the Bible also clearly says what happens after death is judgment. All right, so there's the discussion points. Now, what I've just said to you is not what you as group leader should do. Your role is simply to listen, even if you disagree. And if you want someone to state the disagreement side of the argument, then get them to talk about it. But don't, as group leader, facilitate into a lecture. That's not your role. Your role is simply to invite people to discuss. All right, here we have the reflection, and the reflection, this is going to be, as we start into this section, section two, we start to get a little bit deeper. And what you'll notice is that in doing this, we are now talking about issues that are going to, whether people, unfortunately, whether people like it or not, it's going to demand that they think. Yeah, I know. But that's what we're actually going to be encouraging people to think. And it could be a bit of a stretch for some. So let's see how we go. This is a reflection. And it's based on the life story of a famous Australian who was the former opposition leader of Australia, who was within, I think, 3 votes of becoming Prime Minister of Australia, and then became the Governor General of Australia, which meant he actually had authority, more or less authority, albeit ceremonial authority over the Prime Minister when he became Governor General. All right, this is the story of William Hayden AC. Now, I say AC because by convention, whenever you mention his name, you have to put those initials in. So that's what I'm doing. Was born in Brisbane, Queensland in 1933. His parents, Violet and George, married a week, 2 weeks actually, after he was born. So that right there, that statement tells you something that you need to know. And I'll fill in the blanks as we go through this. His working class dad had an unusual dislike for religion, particularly Christianity. Now, his father was a sailor, actually, an American sailor who sort of, I think the terminology is jump-shipped when in Australia and fathered Bill. But anyway, my father was a very bitter anti-religionist. I think that got to me, Bill Hayden told the ABC's 7:30 report. After William finished high school, he joined the police force, but continued to study part-time at university to earn a degree in economics. This would prove to be handy later in his life when he was made Treasurer of Australia. In 1960, he married Dallas and would go on to have three daughters and a son. In 1961, he stood for federal parliament as a member of the Labor Party and was elected to the House of Representatives. Tragedy struck in 1966 when their five-year-old daughter, Michaela, was struck by a car and killed. This event had a deep and negative effect upon William and added to the seeds of hatred for God that his dad had sown into him. In 1972, the Labor Party won the federal election, and in 1975, William, Bill, was appointed as Treasurer. After Labor's defeat in the 1977 election, Bill was elected as the opposition leader in the federal parliament and narrowly lost the next election and was then replaced as leader by Bob Hawke. From 1983, he served in the Hawke government as the foreign minister and trade minister. Throughout his public life in politics, he was an ardent and very vocal atheist, mocking Christianity, and his political career ended with his retirement in 1989, and the Prime Minister, Bob Hawke, announced that he was going to recommend that to the Queen, that Bill Hayden be appointed Governor General, which is one of the reasons why Bill Hayden resigned from Parliament. So Bill was appointed as Governor General in 1989. The ABC reported that he was the first Governor General to make an affirmation rather than take the oath on the Bible. And that right there, that tells you just how strongly atheist he was as well. He did this at his swearing in. He did the affirmation rather than swear on the Bible. The next Australian Prime Minister, John Howard, said appointing Mr. Hayden as Governor General was a bit like appointing an atheist as Archbishop of Canterbury. And the Archbishop of Canterbury is essentially the first among equals lead bishop within the Anglican Church. This position also came with an appointment as Chief Scout of Australia, a position he declined because he was an atheist, and this was incompatible with the Scout promise. In 1996, he was recognised as Humanist of the Year by the Council of Australian Humanist Societies, which is a largely atheist organisation. Yet in the background of when Mr. Hayden used to be straight out opposed to religion, something or someone was privately, deeply challenging Mr. Hayden's atheism. Back in 1973, Bill was instrumental in the introduction of the Whitlam government's Medicare bill. The promotion of this bill led him to visit various hospitals. This was when he met Sister Angela Mary Doyle, a Brisbane nun and the administrator of the Mater Hospital in Brisbane for 23 years. Sister Angela maintained their friendship over the decades to follow. Yet, years later, he heard that Sister Angela had had a heart attack and Bill went to visit her in hospital. The next morning, I awoke with the strong sense that I had been in the presence of a holy woman, Mr. Hayden told the Catholic Leader newspaper. This journey from atheism to belief in the God of the Bible was a long one for Bill Hayden, but then in 2014, he suffered a stroke and had 7 months to contemplate things as he recuperated. There's been a gnawing pain in my heart and soul about what is the meaning of life? What's my role in it? He told reporter Greg Sheridan. So after dwelling on those things, I found my way back to the core of those beliefs, the church. In 2018, at the age of 85, he publicly announced that he had abandoned atheism and had now embraced Catholic Christianity. There's been a gnawing pain in my heart and soul about what is the meaning of life, he also wrote in a letter to friends. This took too long, and now I'm going to be devoted. From this day forward, I'm going to vouch for God, he said. So here's a question for the group to consider. So you as group leader, reflect on this. You may, even after reading that story, you may invite people to give any reflection. And then ask this question. At the time of his daughter's death, many Christians wrote to Bill telling him that God must have thought this was for the best. And that's I personally think that's a terrible thing to say to someone who's grieving. When someone is processing tragedy, how does what we say and do impact their understanding of God? So here's something that I hope will provoke some discussion. I've got here discuss. And maybe people have got their own story of grief. Maybe they have experienced grief. And people often say the dumbest things when people are grieving. And what a great thing if you can be alerted to those things now before you venture into those sorts of things as well. But anyway, for Bill Hayden, those things only made it more difficult for him to turn to Christ because it gave him a completely misguided understanding of who God was. We now move to the section, The Unseen Influence of a Believer's Life on an Atheist. Bill Hayden was deeply hurt and a man angry at God after the tragic death of his oldest child, who was just 5 years old, when he threw himself into public service so that he could help as many people as possible, especially since God wasn't any help to them. And that just really sums up how he felt that in the tragedy of losing his daughter, and how he now, he was actually considered by many people, I say was, he's still alive at the time of this production, at the age of 90, but he was always considered to be a really good man. And this sort of explains why he was trying to be good. But it was the patient, prayerful, persistent friendship of Sister Angela Mary that challenged Bill's concept of Christianity and opened his heart to accept God. As Bill prepared to be baptized, he wrote to friends, "I still have questions." And that is a great, great response. I still have questions, but enough of his questions, or should we say the big questions, were already answered. But he came to the point where Christianity and evidence for God was enough for him to convert. The authentic life of a genuine believer can have a profound impact on an atheist. In Bill Hayden's story, it was when he saw how Sister Angela handled life when she was confronted with potential death, her heart attack. It seems that God allows his people to sometimes go through hardships, difficulties, pain, or even tragedy to show the world the difference between how the world deals with such things compared with how a believer who trusts in God handles them. So that's a point worth noting, because sometimes people get very disappointed when things don't go their way without realizing God has a reason. God has a purpose. While for many unbelievers, it is the opportunity to get to know a believer and observe their life, particularly when they observe the believer under pressure, that becomes proof of God's existence to them. For other unbelievers, this is not enough. Here's a question for you as group leader to pose to the group. What do you think it also takes for some other unbelievers to accept the truthfulness of the God of the Bible? Heading, faith, proofs, evidence, belief, truth. Faith is sometimes presented as believing something where there is no evidence. And this is a famous thing by Richard Dawkins. He makes this claim that that's what Christians hold to. The faith is where there's no evidence. But this is not what we mean by the term faith. Rather, faith is trusting. Now, here's a fill in the blanks again. The first word, evidence. Trusting the evidence for the, and next word, truthfulness of a claim. A truth must correspond to the claim being made. So, for example, a mathematical proof is a different kind of proof to a historical proof, which is different to the proof that a new world and Olympic record had just been set for the 100 meter sprint. Thus, proofs for the existence of God can reasonably be both personal and, now personal means subjective, you are the subject, you experience this, and it can also be verifiable, that is, it's possible for someone else to verify the evidence, and that means it's objective, so it's outside of the person. And these proofs for the existence of God include these five classic arguments, and they really are classic arguments, and they go right back in Christian history, and these are really worth understanding. So I've got some notes on each of these as well. You may want to refer to the notes just to have a look at what we are referring to. But here they are. Firstly, the universe had a beginning, and that beginning must have had an uncaused first cause. Secondly, the universe displays exquisite design, pointing to a designer with a mind. Thirdly, all people universally have an awareness of the moral law. Fourth, God sent his only eternal Son into the world, who died for sins and was then physically resurrected. And that is absolutely huge. And you'll see that in the Bible study questions in a moment. The claims of Christ, number five, the claims of Christ about new birth, spiritual cleansing, forgiveness of sins, can be personally tested and experienced. And these things are a part of the Christian experience. They are a part of the Christian story. They can be put to the test. All right, this is a quote from Mark Mittelberg. Has there been some new discovery that disproves the existence of a deity? Have the claims of the supernatural been conclusively refuted to the point that we can now deduce that there is no God? To the contrary, the evidence for God is growing day by day as thinking people, including scientists, historians, archaeologists, philosophers, and others, many of whom were former skeptics, find more and more support for the existence of God and for the claims of Christianity in particular. From the Bible. This is where we're going to have a look now at some of the supporting scriptures that will support those five reasons for the existence of God. Question one, what does the psalmist say people should consider as evidence for God? How does this compare with what the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and verse 20? So Psalm 8 and verse 3 talks about when I consider the heavens, and the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place. So obviously, we're talking about a poetic rendering of that. And then Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. And then in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, for what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and a divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. So what do both of these scriptures say? Well, they both, the psalmist and the apostle Paul, both claim that people can see evidence for God as the creator by looking at the world around us. That is creation. Creation points to the creator. That's what Romans chapter 1 says. Question 2. One of the proofs for God's existence is a law referred to in Romans 2:15. Which says, they show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them. Verse 16, to throw it in there, on that day, when according to my gospel, God judges the secrets of men by Christ Jesus. So we're talking about the moral law that God has written on every human heart. the moral law. So people universally know intuitively what is right and what is wrong. Question three, in what way is what is described in John chapter 20, verses 1 to 18, which is the account of the resurrection, where the women go to the tomb, they find the empty tomb, they speak with what one of them speaks with what she thought was the gardener, only then realizing in her grief, this wasn't the gardener at all. It was the risen Jesus, whom she then embraced. And fortunately, John has put in the account, don't cling to me. In other words, she's not clinging to a ghost, an ethereal, disembodied spirit, because there's no clinging to that. And so this is one of the most astounding proofs for God, because it's the proof of the physical resurrection of Christ. And some people have foolishly said, oh, well, back in those days, people believed people rose from the dead. No, that's just twiddlesticks. They did not. People well knew that when you were dead, you were dead. And to be dead 3 days, you were dead. And here Jesus is raised after 3 days. And this was the compelling reason that people believed in Jesus in the first century. All right, question four. In Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30, which says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus gave anyone who would follow him a promise. The Apostle Peter reworded this testable promise in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, which says, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him, because he cares for you. So here we've got Peter, the Apostle Peter, rewording this promise, and this is essentially Christ offering this beautiful promise that you can give him your cares, your burdens, your anxieties, your worries. He will help you carry them. He will sustain you. And because of that, you'll get through. You'll be okay. You will be yoked to him. Beautiful. Here's the only reference I've got here. It's a great little book, Mark Middleberg. It's a rewrite of a book written by a New Zealand businessman that has sold something in the order of 50 million copies. It's The Reason Why, and it's a book that has led many, many people to turn to Christ. I encourage you to have a look at it. Very small, great read, great to hand out to someone. All right, I suggest and encourage you to close in prayer, because this is also important to reinforce what you've just looked at. And you'll see me, well, you'll hear me at least, when we gather again to talk about our next topic, science and religion are in conflict, fact or fiction.